The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor May, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. Open line today, open line tomorrow, this coming Thursday, live with the students of Castle Russian High School. But perhaps you were at that meeting last night. It was meeting number one of four. Listening to You, it was called. About 100 people there last night at Castle Russian High School. Including our own Christian Jones, who was reporting, were you there last night? All the ministers were, well, all the ministers were there except one. Dr. Allenson had already said he wasn't going to be there, but strangely, Treasury didn't have a member there. Michelle Haywood is one of the Treasury members, and I don't think she was invited. But so there was nobody from Treasury there last night. But apparently... Dr. Allenson's going to be there for the other three. He'd already said he couldn't be there. Presumably something else was in the way of that. But no Bill Henderson, no Andrew Smith, and no Michelle Haywood there last. Were you there? Did you enjoy it? Did you have a good time? Did you learn a lot? Did you enjoy the question and answer session? If you were there last night, if you'd like to report on it, by all means, text, email, call, or WhatsApp. Tonight, it's Tapeel QE2 High School. Tomorrow night, Ballacameen High School. And on Thursday, Ramsey Grammar. All the same format. Doors open 5:30. Tea and coffee there, and the session is from 6 till 8 o'clock with the Council of Ministers Listening to You event. Chief Minister, Education, Sport and Culture, Enterprise, Environment, Food and Agriculture, Health and Social Care, Home Affairs, Treasury and Infrastructure, all there. So any thoughts on that for last night? As I mentioned, Michelle Haywood wasn't asked to go there, didn't ask. A quick word now about cats, and this has been brought to my attention. From the 10th of June this year in England, this is England, but we're assuming it's going to be brought to the Isle of Man, it's going to be compulsory for all pet cats in England to have a microchip by the time they reach 20 years of age. So what are your thoughts? That's the UK making it compulsory for pet cats to be microchipped. In 2023, we had 53, this is a message in from the MSPCA, said to us, we had 53 cats come into our care as strays. Only 14 of those were microchipped with up-to-date details to be returned. So any thoughts? Do you think that's going to happen in England? But to all pet cats to have a microchip on the Isle of Man? Richard, I can understand Dr. Allenson not being at the meeting last night, but why couldn't one of the Treasury Department be there, particularly Andrew Smith, who said the public won't mind paying 2% more in tax this year to get to see a dentist or a doctor quicker? Well, neither of which has improved. We're waiting longer every week, and we're still paying the extra in tax. And Manx Care seems to be as poor as ever, even with the millions being taken off people. That's Rich on 134. I don't know whether you've got any particular questions that you're going to be putting to the members of Comin. Anything spectacular that you'd like to confront them with? If you'd like to mention it to us first, but you never know, they may be listening and tell us. Regarding Big John and his fish and chips, I'd like to report last week I was in Port Erin, ordered two fish and chips because I felt like a treat. I was bitterly disappointed. I didn't think there was enough between the two of them to feed one, and it was a bit overpriced. Mr. Perfect, maybe just a big appetite as well. I attended the Southern Government roadshow, although it wasn't what I expected at first. They managed to turn it around into a Q&A between all politicians there and the attendees. Well, there is supposed to be a Q&A session. So that is part of it. I managed to raise my point and ask the question, what's being done to produce more affordable housing, private and social, as the Ireland Plan states that by 2025 we will have affordable, sustainable housing for all. I was speaking to Mr. Morehouse before and he told me that the mid-rent housing in Colby costs more than some private rental accommodation in Castletown, which again isn't affordable. In addition to the the thresholds for social housing are outdated and some families are on the verge of having nowhere to live. Doctors and dentists aren't staying, neither is the youth of the Isle of Man, because they can't afford to live here. Tim Crookall decided to answer me with, speak to me later and we can discuss your story. I felt undermined, as this is not a story. This is, in fact, most people's reality. It deeply concerns me that the minister responsible for this department feels the housing crisis is a story, and it just seems like the views are far from reality. That's Alex Crowley, who's in the Timwell Youth Select Committee. More chip stories to come, hopefully, as well as everything else. So the story, Mr. Cannon, let's just hear what Mr. Cannon had to say. The Chief Minister insists that the island's economy isn't in the same context that it was 18 months ago. What does that mean, not in the same context? Alf Cannon answering questions in Keys about the Isle of Man's hospitality sector today. He discussed some of the challenges facing the industry and also the impact on the cost of living and the full fallout from COVID. In the supplementary question, Mr. Cannon was asked whether the government's position is that the cost of living crisis is actually over. This is Alfred Cannon.
Is that this government's position, that they believe that the actual crisis, the cost of living crisis, is over? Perhaps he could actually clarify that. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chief Minister.
I wouldn't. Depends what definitions you put around it. I absolutely, as I've said, fully recognise the pressures that industry is under. Inflation has come down considerably from the position that it was. The volatility of energy prices has reduced significantly. There have been plenty of hangovers from that, and we know that the economy is still continuing to adjust. It's certainly not in the same context as it was a year and 18 months ago, or so, when Russia chose to invade Ukraine and really kicked off this sort of post-COVID economic adjustment and saw these dramatic increases in prices. There's a lot more stability forecast in the market from where it was 12 to 18 months ago. But that does not mean to say that a lot of business and a lot of families and a lot of our constituents are still not feeling the after effects of that.
That was Mr. Cannon in Keys this morning, Keys Questions. And how does it feel like it to you? It's one of those things that if somebody says there is a cost of living crisis, you can bolt all sorts of things onto it. Presumably, you attach your own circumstances to it. So if you're going through a tough time or you've had some heavy bills or maybe lose an income from the house, then that is. But is there an existential cost of living crisis, do you think? Obviously, as Mr. Cannon mentioned there, the situation in Ukraine was big, and we're all victims of the oil price. I mean, whenever the oil, it seems to impact absolutely everything. So, and presumably that has somewhat calmed down to what it used to be. Certainly it's well under $100 a barrel. So is there actually a cost of living crisis, or is it something that we kind of tell ourselves and then grow into using all the time? Barry's on now. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Andy. It's been a while. Hope you're well.
Good. So the taxi fares have gone up. Did they go up yesterday?
Yeah, they did. Did Manx Radio hear anything or know anything about this?
You know, we've been trying to contact the RTLC at the moment. In fact, I think we're trying to, as I speak, contact the RTLC. But as soon as we find out, we'll let everybody know.
All right. Okay. That's interesting. That's the main reason why I've called in. So I have been a taxi owner, taxi operator, taxi driver for 21 years. Started around 2022 from memory. The without getting too technical on this, the Road Transport Act came in 2001, and the Road Transport Act itself set criteria for apply for hire vehicles and how they should be metered and how they should be operated. so on and so forth. But sticking to the point here, the tariffs were very clearly set out in 2001. The midnight rate, the tariff two, ran basically, I mean, it can be up to the discretion of the RTLC, but they run every night from midnight until 6 a.m. in the morning, and essentially all bank holidays that are night rate. Contrary to what many people think, there is no such thing as time. It is time and a half, and for very many years it was actually much less than time and a half, but simple, it's time and a half. The last fare increase was in 2022. Can't quite remember how much it was. I think it was like 20p or something on the day rate and 30p or something on the night rate. And there was a consultancy period, if I can get my words out, that ran at the beginning of this year, and the trades were invited for input as to whether or not they thought there should be a fare increase this year or not. I've always took the view that it should be sort of pretty much every year, it should be like an inflationary rise if that's what's needed, keep it simple, and therefore people won't really notice it. I'm straight up and simple. I asked this year for 20p on the day rate, and I asked for 30p on the night rate. I didn't ask for anything on increments, and I didn't ask for anything else on top. That's just what I wanted. And I do honestly believe that Christmas Day should have a tariff three, which would be double time. I think it's silly, really, to expect people to be out there working on Christmas Day for time and a half. It's just my own personal view. This year, however, I'm really disappointed with the RTLC, and that's the reason for phoning in.
Okay.
Why am I disappointed? So, because what they've so basically they've took the decision this year, which I guess was based on the consultancy, whereby the majority of people who put an input in, they have asked for 30p on the day rate and 40p on the night rate, more than I think it should have been, but that's what's in, and that's what's going to happen. But they've also decided in their And I'm being sarcastic because I think I need to get my point across, because obviously I don't use bad language and I will do that. But they have decided in their wisdom that to bring the night rate back to 11 p.m. So for 21, 22 years, it's always been midnight. And now they've decided the best thing to do is to bring it back to 11 p.m. But there's no public notifications anywhere about this. And this, as far as I know, started yesterday. My meter was adjusted yesterday, and it's going to be the car, my taxi will go down onto the promenade tomorrow, and the meter will be tested by the car inspector. But surely if they're going to, after 21, 22 years, bring the rate two back by 1 hour, surely Manx Radio and surely all media services should be aware of this. And surely there should be a longer notification period to give people 2, 3, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, however long it takes to actually understand that this is what's going to happen.
When did you first hear of it, Barry?
I first, strange enough, only heard about this about a week ago. I was getting my car fixed in a garage, and another taxi man came in, and he said, "Oh, have you heard about the increases?" I said, "No, I don't think there's going to be any." He said, "No, there is." And he said, "There's a big change regarding tariff too." And I said, "Oh, what's the change?" And I honestly couldn't believe it, and I honestly didn't believe him until he pinged me over an email to show me that this is what they were actually doing. But the key point, Andy, I want to make, because I don't want to hold up the phone lines, because that's just not what I do. I work nights, okay? Now, I possibly should be jumping for joy that I have an hour extra of making an extra little bit of money, but I'm not jumping for joy, and I'll tell you as to the reason why. In those 20, 21 years I've worked at nights, I've had a few runners where people haven't paid. I've sustained much mental abuse, from verbal abuse, from people giving me hassle about fares because they don't want to pay fares. And I've also been attacked physically a couple of times. And this is going to rile some people. I mean, 90% of the people will probably take this on the chin and think, okay, fair enough, it is what it is, I'm not happy about it, but we'll take it. But what about those 10% of people that are going to put me into a vulnerable position and maybe take this out on me? And it would be wrong to think it won't happen, because it's happened to me before, as I said to you. And I think it's disgraceful. I've emailed the RTRC this morning, and I've pretty much told them I think it's disgraceful. And I've also emailed Alf Cannon this morning because I want Alf to know.
So who made the decision? Was it the RTLC, the taxi drivers? Who decided this was going to happen?
What I recommend Manx Radio do is go and have a little look on the website, and they will see the results of the consultation. But unless my eyes are deceiving me, absolutely nobody has asked for this I can see off. Like, nobody. I can't see one person that's actually asked for this to be brought back to 7 o'clock. So therefore, the committee have taken it upon themselves. And really and truly, what I'd like to know is who has actually decided that this was a great idea. And if it is a great idea, bearing in mind the trouble and strife that the service sectors are having at the minute, trying to protect their own businesses, it's almost like the taxi trade has gone some way in opposite direction to what they think. But yeah. I know nobody has asked for this. It's not right. And as I say, consultation alone, the lack of consultation, the lack of notice period, and just to chuck this in, so at the weekend, taxi people are going to say, so if you're gone up to, say, at Onken, which may have cost you £10 previously at 11 o'clock, now the taxi man's going to ask £15, and that's not going to go down well because people aren't going to know about it.
Let's just, for new listeners, just say this again. So the thrust of it is, there is obviously a kind of an inflationary rise, but the fact is that the nighttime tariff will now start at 11 p.m, not midnight, right?
Correct, sir. Yeah.
And the Road Transport Licensing Committee, as far as you're concerned, never had any request for this to happen. They've just decided that what's going to happen.
Exactly. And it's unclear as to what they're thinking, as to why they think that they should do it. I don't understand why, because it concerns me as well now that maybe people are going to start choosing to travel by bus or whatever they decide to do. But there's no reason, there's no explanation as to why they've decided to do this.
Okay. All right, Barry. Well, we'll get on to that. We'll try and find out, get to the bottom of it, and we appreciate it. There's one taxi driver who didn't ask for it, and that's you.
I would never have asked for that. I've always, as I said to you, I've always, for the last 20 years, I've always made one simple request, and it's always denied. And as long as I have a voice, I'll always ask for it. Christmas Day should be double time, because they are not going to get me out there for time and a half.
Right.
And that simple request, year on year on year on year, they deny that. But then they come up with this absolutely, what I would class as a harebrained idea, to bring this back to 11 o'clock. That is not delighting me, and it's certainly not going to delight the travelling public in these times of inflationary pressures.
Okay, Barry, we appreciate it. Thanks for clearing that up. Good to hear from you.
Thank you so much.
Cheers now. 24 minutes past 12. Well, that's the story, that nighttime tariff on the taxis will now start at 11 p.m. and not at 12 midnight. So we'll try and get to the RTLC we were talking about is the Road Transport Licensing Committee, which comes under, it's DEFRA, of course, because the RTLC office, I think, is in Tyslewallian, the DESC's headquarters. But the DEFRA minister, that's Claire Barber, deals with all matters relating to the RTLC in Tynwald. So, if you're a taxi driver, if you're a user of taxis, I just wonder what you think about that. The fact that night time at 11 o'clock now and not at 12 midnight. Julian's on now. Hi, Julian. Were you there last night?
Hi, Andy. I went to the other one, the Liberal Vanin hosted one at the Legion with the MUA.
Oh, right. And how was that?
It was very interesting, actually. It was very polite. Not too many people there, but that allowed for an excellent extended Q&A session. Lots of very, very interesting questions and answers. Just wanted to just go through a couple of them.
Okay, first of all, who was representing the various organisations?
Right, so we had Lizzie Riley. I'm just trying to remember who the other ones were there. We had Phil King, Adrian Dobbins, and John Wannenberg.
Okay, yeah.
So one of the answers that I have been wondering about was, you know, obviously, even if you employ somebody, you want to know how many hours they're going to work a week. So I was wanting to know what sort of power we're going to get from these turbines if Eriesteyn comes to fruition. And it turns out that what they're doing is they're recording the wind data and then they're applying that to a computer model that's supplied by the wind turbine manufacturer. But unfortunately, that computer model is proprietary, and it's therefore secret. So we're not going to know, really, what the truth... Until it's going to be like, well, we won't know till we put them up, and then we'll see. However, the industry...
And yep. What did they say? I mean, how did they explain that? Did they just say that was industry standard, or did they seem surprised by the fact that this sort of data isn't going to be publicly available?
Well, the good news is that the Manx Utilities website is now hosting the recorded wind data. So there is some open source software out there that can actually look at that, and it produces nice graphs of, you know, the wind direction and what's been the power and what's too much and what's too little. So I've just downloaded that now, so I shall be having a look at that with interest.
Okay.
The other things were the touted cost of the Eerie Staying wind farm is $36 million. But there's been an FOI from minutes of a Comin meeting where they stated that contingency fund, if anything goes wrong, is tight, which is interesting when you think about how Liverpool ferry terminal kind of went a little bit over there.
Crikey.
Also, the scoping report has been submitted but is not available for public scrutiny. It would be kind of nice to see what they've been finding with all their bits and bobs. It's interesting to note that the Isle of Man Electricity Act, it's got three considerations, but only two seem to be mentioned at the moment. The Electricity Act states, the first one is maintain security of supply, which I think we can all agree with. The second one is renewable generation if possible. But the third one, which doesn't seem to get mentioned, is preserve natural beauty and amenity. And that's one that should never be omitted from any conversation about this, I think. And, you know, there's been one or two wind turbine planning applications that have been turned down on visual amenity in very recent times. So it's kind of interesting if you're talking about at least five Blackpool Tower height wind turbines that are going to dominate the whole of the south. In actual fact, on the way in, I was looking to see where you can see Eerie Staying from, and it's really clear from the Comis, you know, the Mount Murray area, Comis yeah. Hotel area. So you'll five Blackpool Towers. If you've been on the boat going in, going to the UK, you can see Blackpool Tower from a long, long way away, and these ones are only going to be a few miles, so it'd be interesting.
And the proposed, are you saying that the proposed wind turbines are the height of Blackpool Tower?
Yeah, that's the sort of industry standard. But of course, Blackpool Tower is a stationary object. These things will be sweeping several thousand acres, you know, square acres, you might imagine, as they're sweeping, well, several hundred acres as they're sweeping around.
What was the mood of the meeting like?
Most people seem to be wanting to get some answers to some questions that have been raised many times. You know, I raised a point about what will be the cost of getting to net zero effectively, but supplying the huge amount of extra base load for electric vehicle charging and heating energy. So heat energy at the moment is four times more than what full roads can put out. And if you imagine if you were to strap, you know, electric fires to every room in your house, you imagine what your electricity bill would be like. So that could end up being, if we end up sort of losing our self-sufficiency and putting interconnectors in, we're going to need a lot more than one. And they're hundreds of millions of pounds. So
did they mention this second interconnector? Because when Lizzie Riley was on Man in Line, they talked about, I mean, not just the probability, but, you know, almost the definitive article that there is going to be another interconnector and it will be somewhere on the northeast of the Isle of Man.
Yeah, it was mentioned, and that seems to be part of what's going on. What's interesting is that power that's imported into the Isle of Man will be treated as green energy, but there'll be no disclosure as to what the generation source is. And as we know, Rishi Sunak's been putting out all these licenses, 200 of them, for getting gas out the ground. So our net zero tick box exercise will show that we're doing green, but there'll actually be no verification at any moment as to, because they're doing these smart grids where they're switching around between coal, gas, wind, solar, you know, depending on what the weather's doing. So there is no disclosure as to it's a bit like, to put it in another way, the cobalt in an electric vehicle, there is no way to find out whether it's been involved with slavery of people and children in Congo or not, because they don't do the breakdown of it. So it's a bit like the electricity. We don't know, even though our tick boxes will say, yep, that's green because it was imported. There's no way to say if it was actually from a green source.
Where can you get this wind data from? Is it on the Manx Utilities website? Is it an app?
Yeah.
Or where is it?
Yeah. All you do is, if you just go and do a search on the internet for Manx Utilities wind data, I found it within one or two searches, and then you get a CSV file. So it's basically, if you were to open it up in Excel, you'll get huge amounts of information of wind direction and the time and the strength and whether it's too much or too little and okay. All this kind of thing.
And who's providing this? Is it Manx Utilities or the people that are doing it?
Well, I mean, that AQ Systems sodar machine that's beeping away every second up there, they've got two options. They've either got, I think, an SD card, but that would be a bit of a pain to do that. So the other option is a satellite link. So basically, I think Wardell Armstrong either are logging in and looking at it, and probably MUA are too. So it may be shared data that you can just go and get it live. I mean, it'll probably, you can literally see what the wind's doing live on that thing if you've got the right login for it.
Okay, so you go to Manx Utilities wind data, yeah?
Yeah, and then there's a whole page dedicated to it with a little link that you click on, and then you'll need to get hold of some sort of data analysis stuff that will pull off the Campbell data, as it's known as, and then you can, it'll sort of make all the fancy graphs for you. You can have a look, see what's going on.
Okay, all right, Julian, we appreciate that. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
All right, 27 minutes before one on Manx Radio. Southern Andy said, I attended last night's meeting. It was excellent. I learnt a lot more in 2 hours than I have in months. Excellent format, and also having one-to-ones with numerous ministers. There was an open Q&A with some interesting dialogue, albeit sarcastic comments from audience members who didn't seem to have a grasp of economics and the economic environment that we live in globally, not just the Isle of Man, which is faring better than many, says Southern Andy. Please, can we have these sessions at least twice a year? I'm sure the Chief Minister's hanging on your words. David now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. I just want to give you a little bit of praise, and it's not, it's in conjunction with the DOI and the department there, is if you probably noticed going around, is it a UK vehicle actually sealing cracks around the island, all over the island. And I came across them the other day, and they do look like a massive patchwork when they're finished. And I just wondered, because they are sealing the cracks in the road. I know about water going in and then the road lifting up and so forth like that. I just wonder how long they're here for. They're not doing any on the TT course, obviously, so they're doing major work on the TT course. But I just wondered how long they're over for, and it probably would be a question I might want to ask the DOI minister when we ever get a chance. The other one was, too, if he's listening, because politicians do listen to you, Andy, now, to get the heads up, is what happened to that lane in Willesden Crescent? My colleagues, when I used to live in Willesden there, are always saying to me, what happened to that lane that was extinguished and taken over by the council now, the city? So is the city prepared to give that back? Because they shouldn't have taken it over.
And how long's that been? How long's that subject been a hot topic for now?
Well, it's a hot topic to me, and it's a hot topic to the people that I know, and to the people who live in Willesden there, who have this lane extinguished, because you could go from Willesden Crescent to Johnny Watson's Lane and catch a bus fairly easy, and now you can't. The houses took it over. And how could they do that? The other thing I was going to ask you, the direct question, in case I don't get to answer it the next few days, is, Andy, is the housing board a landlord? And the answer is?
And the answer is, there we are.
I think it is a yes, because if their control of housing stock, which is leased or let or in control of, shouldn't they be registered as a landlord?
Is it a landlord, I wonder?
Under the Act.
Yeah.
Because They're, you can't FOI them. It's a bit like the steam packet, but anyway, we're talking about the housing board there. And what is their remit for the future of all this land we've got, like the Park Road School, Summerland, the bus station, all these other pieces of land we got? Even, and I forgot, because we go past it every day, don't we, is the QB.
Crikey. What, yes.
What are they doing with the pub? They've got two pubs. There's one on Derby Road as well, near the old school there, or was the old school. But what are we doing with the QB? And what is the plan for the Housing Development Board? And who is in charge and who's funding the money? We know who's funding the money. It's the taxpayers. So can we not be part of what's actually going on? That would be a cool question to ask somebody in Parliament, wouldn't it?
Okay. All right. Appreciate that, David. Thanks for calling.
Yep.
Good to hear from you. The Mountain Road is closed currently. Well, it's closed until 10 o'clock tonight for preparation work ahead of TT and also general maintenance. Jill is with us. Hi, Jill.
Oh, hello, Andy. I'm going up to Ballacameen tomorrow, and I'd like to, your advice as to who to ask to speak to. It's regarding the playing area, because we desperately need a playing area in Douglas. I'm speaking on behalf of a lot of young mothers, a lot of Polish girlies, and we go now with the little children on their tricycles opposite the Sefton, you know, where they've made that lovely little big round seating area.
Yeah.
And they go around there with their tricycles. But we used to go, over 2 years ago now it's been closed, we used to go to the playing area. I don't drive. The mothers don't drive with their two children. The fathers are off with the cars, landscape gardeners, etc. We need a playing area. How much does it cost? I don't have a garden in Douglas City. I'm even thinking of cramming a swing somewhere on the back balcony. It's just outrageous. Who do I go and see tomorrow?
I go and see the Education, Sport and Culture Minister. I go and see Daphne Kane. She's Education,
right,
Sport.
I should
she's,
do that.
She's only been in the job a couple of months. But just coming back to
that
play.
That would be marvellous.
Coming back to play areas, these are humble things that mean a lot to people, and particularly a lot, and I'm not being sexist when I say mothers, because mothers love...
And we all sit and talk. Some of them can't speak a lot of the language.
And that's the social element of having a place where lots of kids can play and mothers and parents can chat.
I've been on your radio a few times now. I haven't been well. I don't drive. My eldest granddaughter, Ivy Grace, is starting school this year. I last went with her to the playing area because I look after her a little bit, and it's lovely to sit there and talk to my young mothers. She was 1.5. My little German granddaughter is coming from Munich. She comes every year in August. Yet again, Grandma can't go with her to a playing area. So where do we go? On the other end of the spectrum, Andy, my eldest son, he's a hospital porter and he likes to exercise. And he goes up, I think it's near Westmoreland. I never know where anywhere is. I don't drive. But it's an old school, I think. And he goes and plays basketball with a group of Filipino boys. They let him in the group. He did it on his own before. And they said, you come play with us. So he goes there now for the last 6 months. And they haven't even got a basketball net. And he was asking me, shall we order one online? It's just a frame. Now, no wonder there's so many vandalisms here, because there's nothing for the kids to do.
Before all this happened, which was the play area that you went to, the one on the prom?
Yes, and they took it all down, I think, when the wall broke.
Yes, but that was years ago, and now they say...
Yeah, well, it was 2.5 years ago. I know exactly how long it was, because I've been on your radio show. Claire Barber gave a little speech that she doesn't have a magic wand. Well, get those fairies out, because I want at least my three-year-old granddaughter from Munich to sit with me in the sunshine. I've not been well. I can't drive. And these young mothers, they have to now go with their children outside the Sefton and bounce around there on the tricycles with them. And we can do more shopping when a mother looks after it like we do. I look after the children, and the Polish girls go and do a bit of shopping.
Okay, all right. Well,
so
I appreciate
who do I
that.
See again? I'll write
well,
it down.
I would speak
Andy.
To them. I mean, she will probably tell you that it's Douglas Council's responsibility, but I would make as much noise as you can.
Because I am now.
The fact is, this comes under well-being. This is well-being. It's physical well-being.
Well, we're thinking well-being. Of getting a signed petition together, because there are a lot of these girlies. And like you said, they get to know other girlies with children. We don't, you know, it's good for them.
In terms of government expenditure, this is absolute peanuts, Jill. It's peanuts.
Thank you. And I'm sure Claire Barber's got a swing and a slide in the back of her house.
Okay. All right. Well, all the best, and let me know what happens, Andy. Okay.
Thank you, Andy. Bye.
Thanks for that. And thanks to everybody telling me that Nobles Park has got basketball and also a very big play area. But of course, if you're not that mobile, Nobles Park is up a big hill, and it is a terrific place. I have to say though that some of the playing machines and playing equipment there has seen better days. Rust has got to parts of it, but they'll probably say it costs a lot of money. But in terms of the infrastructure overall, new playing equipment, is that so expensive? When it's good for children, it's good for parents, good for everybody, really, isn't it? Here's Wilf now. Hi, Wilf.
Hi, Andy. It's just a very quick one here.
Yep.
I've got the examiner. I'm just looking at the examiner here. And there's an article in it says, where is fit to swim in Manx seas? Now, it gives you all the different ones, different what state the water is.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this is something I can't understand. And, of course, this is actually for all the people that go swimming in Ramsey, I would say, because it says here that Bayna Cricketty Douglas Central, South Ramsey and Port St Mary have all been rated good in the latest bathing water report, just as they were in 22.
Yeah.
But the three excellent ones, this is the queer bit, the three excellent ones, North Ramsey, Glenwillan and Port Erin. Now, I showed you when you come down to talk to me about South Beach, and you could see all the rubbish it was on, and I said, but the bathing water is excellent because there's no sewerage or whatever.
Yeah.
But then I showed you North Ramsey Beach.
Oh, by the Balladool Pipe.
Yes, and they put it down here as the bathing water is excellent. And the sewer empties on the beach every day. Something is desperately wrong here.
Well, what runs off from Balladool? It's been treated and it's been filtered, obviously.
Yes. It's all the chemicals run off from there. They don't take any chemicals out. There's no chemicals taken out of any sewerage works in the island. None at all. And so it's all poison. It's all heading off into the sea. Now then, they also add, when you go to Balladool sometimes, the smell is terrible because the sewage works is there. So they add their own chemicals to that, which runs straight back onto the beach.
Oh, is that why it smells of strawberries there sometimes?
That's the one. You got it. That's it. Well, that's their own chemicals.
I'd wonder where the smell of strawberries came from.
Oh, there you go. Well, I like strawberries, but I didn't eat that many strawberries. But that's what happened, and it's just ridiculous as far as I can see.
Anyway, the bathing water in South Douglas is fine, South Ramsey is fine as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, it's good. All the different ones in the island is not very good, so we won't go into all them. But the North Ramsey one, where the sewerage empties onto the beach, is excellent. I don't understand this at all.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Wilf. Good to hear from you.
Okay.
Cheers now.
All right.
14 minutes before one. I'm a taxi driver, says Texter 476. I can assure you I know of no other taxi driver that wants these fare increases. So why does the RTLC, who incidentally have nobody in the trade, why have they suddenly made this decision? And in particular, this bringing back nighttime tariffs coming from midnight back to 11 p.m. So 11 p.m. is not far into a night out, is it? And the taxi tariff will be going up at 11 p.m. That's another nail in the coffin, says Paul, for the hospitality industry, putting an 11 o'clock ceiling on normal taxi fares. This has got to seriously result in redundancies in taxi jobs and hospitality jobs. I think it's madness. And G said, another small nail in the coffin for the hospitality industry if people leave venues an hour earlier to avoid higher taxi fares. And John said, if you try to get in touch with the RTLC, don't expect a hasty reply. According to their automatic email reply, it takes 5 days to respond to an email as long as they're not busy. Des said, the Wimmel data is just to con the government. And get Uber on the Isle of Man, says Andrew, which will sort this lot out. It's crazy. It costs £15 to get from Douglas to Onchan after midnight. Now it's going to be 11 p.m. It's a 9-minute drive, says Andrew. And Julian in Port St Mary, so at a time when hospitality sector is requesting assistance, the powers that be start interfering with taxi tariffs. You really couldn't make this up, could you? I might not get a chance to go on Thursday to ask our ministers. I just want to wonder, says Woody. Hi, Woody. What's their investment after their administration? Will they be staying around or retiring abroad like some other expats? So why should our kids fight your battles for you if you're not showing them a good example? My investment, says Woody, on the Isle of Man for tourism and the Isle of Man would be a sea life centre. It's a big, big attraction across, so a sea life centre for the Isle of Man. How can you help people instead of tell me what's going to happen? So you should design our future, says Woody. Typical Isle of Man government, says Texter 328, avoiding any sort of accountability with the non-appearance of Treasury last night and even a total refusal to speak about the assisted dying. A bluffer's guide to government, says Texter 328, did they not talk about assisted dying? Well, the good news is there are 100 people there last night, so let's hope we can get even more along tonight to QE2. Free tea and coffee. Doors open 5:30, 6 till 8 p.m. this listening to you session with the Chief Minister and members of the Council of Ministers. The harsh truth is, says Sue, if you let your cat roam, it's at risk of being in an accident. Cats run out into the road, and no driver I know runs over an animal on purpose, and it doesn't necessarily mean they were speeding either. Roaming cats are a nuisance. They kill birds, possibly cause accidents, and also doing their business in neighbouring gardens, and no, they don't bury it. Many owners now keep their cats in and have an enclosed run for them in the garden to let them outside, but to keep them safe, says Sue. This is because in the UK they're bringing compulsory chipping of cats. It will be in the UK later on this year. Is it something that you think should be introduced here?
Spring, a time for new beginnings and nature. This season, why not have a fresh start by switching your savings to Guernsey's Bank Skipton International and watch them grow. Skipton International offers a range of savings accounts, from fixed term to notice and easy access, enabling your savings to bloom for longer. So make this spring one to remember by switching to Skipton International today.
For details of all Skipton International savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
The Ginger Hall has it all. Check out the new restaurant, now open, at the Ginger Hall Hotel, where you'll find a fantastic range of food, from classic winter warmer bistro-style dishes to delicious Sunday specials and great celebration meals. Don't delay. Book now on 897-231 or visit our Facebook page for all our open opening times, pictures and full menus. You'll even find details on our live music and more. The Ginger Hall really does have it all.
From our castles to our cottages, our museums and the great Laxey Wheel. You'll find hidden treasures around every corner when you visit a Manx National Heritage site. Fill your summer making treasured memories with Manx National Heritage. Sites now open every day. By visiting, you help protect our treasured island for generations to come. Plan your visit today at manxnationalheritage.im.
Every Sunday afternoon here on Manx Radio at 4 o'clock, join myself, Simon Clark,
as Mish Phil Gorn,
live with Gullus Gagan. We clarify and translate some Isle of Man place names.
Riet na Slagen. Well, Riet is a view, and then na Slagen is the hills, but in the construction there, it means of the hills. So Riet na Slagen, the view of the hills.
Plus, we go through some of the Manx words and dialect.
Surely everyone knows Sheel, don't they?
Mischief. That's Gullus Gagan, live here on Manx Radio every Sunday afternoon at 4.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster Mike, take me this before one. Here's Steve now. Hi, Steve.
How you doing? You okay?
Good, thanks. Yeah, what's on your mind?
Oh, good, man. No, just the state of the roads and road tax. When obviously you get your new form to go and do your road tax. The amount of repairs that you obviously have made to my vehicles in the last 12 months, you know, is unbelievable. The state of the roads, the potholes, manholes, you know, cracks across the road, and the government say there's no money to do, you know, they're doing the best with what money they have, but there's no money to repair the roads correctly. They never, ever, ever get these roads put right for people. And the amount of money that we spend on our vehicles, and they are getting damaged day in, day out, it's about time that they stopped road tax over here. You know, enough asking the government to put the roads right, because obviously they haven't got a clue what they're doing or how to do the job. And my argument is, stop the road tax and I'll put that money to repair my vehicle. You know, spend money. Times are hard at the moment, as you know. Everything's going up. They've got the audacity to hold the hand out and expect money, you know, in their pocket to put a disc in your window to have your vehicle smashed and damaged.
Do you think it's, I mean, do you think it's psychological, or do you think the roads have never been worse?
Well, I don't know what roads the government officials drive down, but the roads that I use day in, day out, they are horrendous, and they are not getting put right. And one instance was, they closed Ballasalla off, they put these three-way lights up, and we were sat in traffic thinking, oh my God, you know, they're going to do the road now. Fantastic. We got round through the village, only to find there was two guys with a bucket of tarmac digging a little trough around one of the manhole covers to put that piece of tarmac back in by hand. And that was it. Cones removed, chaos, let go sort of thing. And nothing else was done. They do one area, example, one manhole cover, and behind them people with the bucket of tar, the roads fall into bits and they just disappear. And that's it for a year. Nothing gets done. And the road tax, as I say, the extortionate rates that they're charging people. You know, everything's gone up for people to afford. We pay our insurances. We pay our tax and duty on the fuel. That's enough. If they can't put the roads right, let's stop asking the government to put the roads right. Let them fall apart. Let them just disintegrate like they are doing. They can wash their hands of responsibility from it, because we won't be paying road tax. We'll just put the money towards getting our vehicles repaired. And that's, the people should stand together over here. It's an island. The majority of people should get together and say, enough, we're not paying road tax anymore, we'll look after our vehicles. And that's what I think should be done.
Okay, all right, Steve, thanks for calling today. Appreciate that. Good to hear from you. Yeah, Loch Promenade Children's Play Area has been delayed because Douglas Council have got a harebrained idea to put a splash area there that's only going to be used for 3 months in the summer. Jill said, thank you to the taxi driver for letting us know that the cost of taxis going up, especially the time being brought forward from midnight to 11 p.m. I have a special needs person visit me and I treat him to a taxi home. I now know to get him home an hour earlier before the price goes up. Anonymous texted in, oh, it's a WhatsApp in, just to say that playground on the prom was used by all islanders and greatly appreciated by parents trying to shop. One parent could go to the park while the other person shopped. And also a note in from Bill, who just said that my children played on the prom all their young lives. If it's raining, we went to the sea terminal. There was a play area there. Of course, that's gone as well. That play area is gone. The Dragon's Castle was parties only. Not sure if that's changed back, but there's nothing now. It's a complete disgrace. I think Dragon's Castle is open. You think you get a two-hour session at Dragon's Castle there. There are lots of comment on the particular cat chipping. We'll get back to that. But also, I want to get to Anne-Marie, who asked me what's happening at Balfane Roundabout and what's happening regarding this covenant. The DOI has agreed the terms of the sale last year. The Attorney General's Chambers continues talking to Malou commissioners over the covenant, although the department says progress is being made. Basically, it's a land issue preventing progress on that new Balfane roundabout. You know, the one by that massive new estate. Funding for the roundabout's been previously approved, with properties at Railway Terrace demolished in preparation for the construction. Disposal of hazardous waste relating to the building of the roundabout's been presented a challenge. Tim Crookall confirmed a number of options have been considered to deal with the coal tar as well. But as yet, the Ballasalla bypass hasn't got the Balfane roundabout. Further funding's going to be needed to deal with that coal tar that's present in the current roundabout, and that funding hasn't been approved. So, if you thought the Ballasalla hold-up was bad, you wait till they start building that Balfane roundabout. They'll be printing calendars for that. That's it. Remember, if you're off to the Listening to event tonight, QE2 High School, doors open 5:30, 6 till 8 with all the ministers, and say hello to Christian Jones while you're there. And thanks to Chris Quirk on the phones today. Enjoy your Tuesday.
WINT.